Calvin Hammond in our obviously home studio for From the Front Line. Today we continue with the topic, or the discussion rather, of the current quarantine that we are going through in South Africa. And I'm pretty sure the majority of the listeners are also experiencing some sort of quarantine in this so-called COVID-19 pandemic. The topic of today, God's law or chaos?
Well, that really is the choice because right now we do seem to be getting into quite a lot of chaos. And there was a time not that long ago when Christians were known to be people of integrity who could be trusted to keep their word. And there was such a good Christian ethic when I was growing up that a verbal agreement would be binding and sufficient. And we didn't, I grew up without burglar bars and security gates and alarms, and I never knew what was to be locked out of home because nothing was really locked. And if the front door was locked, which is rare, we'd go to the back door, which was never locked, and there was no burglar bars in the windows. I could go to the shop and buy things on my father's account, and I didn't even have to sign for it as a 10-year-old, as an 8-year-old even, because the shopkeeper assumed, well, you must have your father's permission and authority. And there was no question my father could go and fill up the fuel at the local petrol station without even exchanging money. They'd put down what he owed, and at the end of the month or week, he'd settle. And when you think that was the ethics not that long ago in my memory, but now we've got food trucks, delivery trucks looted. Just yesterday, two trucks stoned, delivery drivers and other workers, and they're injured. Total contents of the trucks looted while police stood by and did nothing. This is at Bonte Oval.
Yeah, there was even photographic evidence of the police sitting in their trucks right next to them.
Yes, you can go onto the Henry Morton Stanley School of Christian Journalism Facebook page, and there's pictures of a police vehicle in one picture, another one, multiple policemen in full kit, battle gear, the whole lot with bulletproof vests, standing by doing absolutely nothing, maintaining social distancing, while a mob of, 80, 100 or more people are crowded around a truck, looting the truck. So that's Bonte Oval. On Saturday, we had the Catholic Cathedral in Cape Town, directly facing Parliament, just opposite the street from Parliament. St. Mary's was vandalized, desecrated, and looted. And they stole everything from the candlesticks through to the offering plate. Even the poor box, where people put in some coins and money to help the poor, even that was stolen. So we're reaching a lawless stage where people can loot not just and desecrate a church, a sacred place, but even food destined for disadvantaged communities, food that was going to be distributed free to the poor, can be looted, and the police stand by and don't intervene. So we've reached something of a lawless situation.
I think this is a perfect enough example of when us as normal humans receive more restrictions, and when the government crackdowns on us more in an intention to make a situation better, it in fact, this is not the case, when the government puts more restrictions on us.
Yes, so right now you've got a shop would be in violation of government law if they sell a roast chicken or if they sell a hot pie. Now, bear in mind that you've got a lot of emergency workers. I've been a fireman and my mother's a nurse, and we know what it's like, that people are working long shifts, night shifts, and they go past shop and they just want a ready meal, just a hot pie or a roast chicken or something like that. But now that's illegal. You can't get prepared cooked food from Woolworths, even though it's there, the shop's open. But now that section's not allowed to be open because of some arbitrary law. They've even decided that selling biltong is now not essential, therefore biltong, which a lot of workers, I remember when we were in the fire brigade and you'd be working long hours, for many people, that was their main meal. They might just take a stick of biltong, and it's an easy to use meal while you're on the run. But with all the people who in emergency services, they now denied a whole lot of these things, from pies, roast chickens, biltong. But, you can loot a truck and the police can stand by, watch and do nothing. But if somebody's running on their own, practicing social distancing and exercising alone, or if a person's walking their dog in their own neighborhood, that's a crime and they can get a massive fine.
We had one of those examples recently. A friend of mine was running at an abandoned football club, which is next to a train line and next to a township. There's not a lot of people that are even in this area. He was training completely on his own, and the police come and they were about to arrest him, but they just gave him a fine saying that you're in violation of the lockdown procedure. But I can go to Woolworths or Pick and Pay or any shop, have crowds of hundreds of people going into aisles and picking up equipment that a lot of other people have probably touched or picked up or breathed on, but that's fine, no issues.
Yes, and then there's somebody who goes surfing on Durban Beach, completely banned beach, there's no one else there, and he thinks getting a bit of fresh air, which is actually healthy, you'd think, and the police can arrest him, literally arrest him for trying to surf, and gave him a 5,000 rand fine, but you can loot a truck of food that's destined for the poor.
With the police right next to them.
Yes. So, what is law and what is right and wrong? You know, in the scripture we read in Amos 5, hate evil, love good, maintain justice in the courts. Let justice roll on like a river, righteousness like a never-failing stream. We read in Proverbs 14:34 that righteousness exalts a nation, but sin is a disgrace to any people. And it's a disgrace when people hear that we can have our churches desecrated and looted, that we can have our churches closed, that you can have law-abiding people prosecuted and fined and taken through the humiliation of arrest. And yet you can have a mob attack a truck, loot it of its food, damage property, and steal from the poorest of the poor, including injuring the drivers who are trying to transport the materials, and police who are there to protect us literally stand by, large numbers of police stand by doing absolutely nothing. So what is law and what is right and wrong in a situation where literally you can see the criminals being allowed to carry on with their destruction of life and property, but you see the law-abiding criminalized?
But not even only the criminals. There have been multiple situations where even police have been arrested for theft. There was a situation, I think, 3 days ago where someone was transporting money to, I think, pay some of their workers who fall under the category of essential. Their money was in their boots. The police pulled them over, confiscated all the money as contraband.
Yes, and didn't report it. And so you had a whole lot of police arrested for stealing 30,000 rand from one man's vehicle. And this is just one of the examples. You've got other cases of police looting liquor shops and selling illegal cigarettes and liquor that they might have even confiscated or in some cases stolen and involved in practices which are now illegal. So this is a major problem in all areas, that power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And in a time of lockdown where you effectively have martial law, the possibility of abuse by agents of the state is very high, because also when people are limited in their ability to move around and travel, they're also limited in their ability to report such abuse. And when the press are even being told to stay off the streets, we had on the first day of lockdown, I saw the video footage of it, is up in Johannesburg, there was this journalist, plainly identified as media, trying to film what was going on. The police and army came and started open fire. And this person is plainly screaming the whole time, a woman, "I'm media, I'm media, I'm media." And they say, "Get off the street." He says, "But I must be here. This, you're not essential." Well, the media is meant to be reporting what's being done. And also, they're there to ensure that the police or army don't exceed their bounds and go against the law. And so media are playing actually an essential role in times like this. And to be shooting at the police and threatening, I mean, shooting at the media and threatening the media to get off the street and you've got no place here and you're not essential, who has the right to determine that? So obviously there's a lot of abuse that can take place. And we've also seen complaints of communities where they say food parcels to relieve them, because they were the most vulnerable communities, we're not getting to them because they were only being given to members of the family of the politician and to members of the political party of that politician, not to the broad masses of the people in the community. And so you had people complaining about this kind of abuse. Now, so there's so many areas of abuse, people saying that they've been told you've got to pay a bribe to be allowed through this roadblock, or they'd be arrested, people having some of their foodstuff stolen by police and army at roadblocks, people being beaten, being physically attacked, whipped and punched by police in the streets, And there's been video footage of that too, in Khayelitsha, all around Cape Town. Mitchell's plane, we've seen this. And then, of course, you've got times when they're actually stealing from you. So some law-abiding people have been criminalized. A lot of criminals have been somehow turned a blind eye to so that they can just carry on, particularly when it's a large group. Looting shops, looting liquor stores, looting vehicles. So we've heard from a number of people who are going into the communities as volunteers to feed the starving people and who no longer have jobs and livelihoods, that in many cases they feel afraid for their own safety while they're going to try. And that in many cases people aren't even willing to stand in line and patiently wait for the food that's been given to them free, but they get lawless. And so some of these volunteers have fled feeling they're not even safe. And even with police and army standing around, they don't feel that their lives are being protected. So there is a lawlessness, and it seems the longer this lockdown goes on, the deeper this lawlessness increases.
Well, this is one verse that I can refer to, John 14, verse 23. If anyone loves me, he will obey my teaching. And I think this is a challenge that we're all facing. Do we continue to follow the laws of the government, especially with the negative effects that they're having, or do we follow a sense of we follow what we know is right and we know what is correct?
Right. So many Christians don't seem to understand we're in a war, and we're in a war of ideas and a war of loyalties, and you either give your allegiance to God or to Satan. And the world is a battlefield. And unfortunately, many Christians have failed to renew their minds. We're told to not be conformed to this world, but to be renewed in our minds by the washing of the word, by being able to discern what is right and wrong, and to know what is the good and accept and perfect will of God, Romans 12. So many do not understand how the humanist worldview, an atheist, secular humanist worldview, conflicts with a biblical worldview, because all law must be based on God's law. And in fact, this has been recognized for centuries. Magna Carta, the greatest statute, the first written restriction laws of government ever, over 800 years ago, 1215, Magna Carta was enacted as law in Britain, and every monarch since then has had to swear to uphold Magna Carta, which recognized the rights of basic things: freedom of speech, freedom of thought, freedom of movement, freedom of association, freedom of conscience, freedom of religion, right to a fair trial, innocent until proven guilty, and all kinds of different rights such as these have been enshrined in Magna Carta and every Bill of Rights since. So our Bill of Rights in South Africa, which, by the way, cannot be suspended and cannot be at any time restricted or infringed upon by the government. That's what a Bill of Rights is. It guarantees freedom of movement, freedom of thought, freedom of association, freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom of conscience, freedom of worship, freedom of religion. And so it's deeply disturbing that any people and any government can think that a state of emergency or national disaster or whatever a government wants to call it in any way gives anyone the right to suspend the Bill of Rights and to suspend our rights as enshrined in the scriptures, as recognized in Magna Carta or in the South African Bill of Rights as well, that you have freedom of movement. What government has a right to restrict your freedom of movement or your freedom of association, or even to tell you that churches can't gather? To think that for the first time in the history of the world, most churches have been shut, not only by order of the government, but by agreement of the churches themselves, where they have said, oh, we cannot meet because of a pandemic. Well, we've had bubonic plagues, and we've had the Spanish flu, and we've had COVID-2, and we've had SARS and MERS and a whole lot of other swine flu, and many pandemics have hit before, but I've never heard of a time when globally 3.5 billion people would be in lockdown and hundreds of thousands of churches would be closed on Sunday and even Easter. So it's quite disturbing that many people think, but you must obey the government, whereas actually government should obey its own laws, which includes the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, which expressly says government may not in any way infringe on people's basic freedoms, which include your freedom of movement and worship and religion.
And do you think this could be a potential warning / punishment from God? It says in Romans 1 verse 28, since they did not think it worthwhile to retain the knowledge of God, he gave them over to a depraved mind. Do you think this is a big wake-up call or a big punishment similar to what happened to Haiti?
It certainly could be. If you look at Romans 1 in context, it speaks about all the danger of people who know the truth but suppress the truth and refuse to give thanks to God and refuse to worship God but rather choose to believe a lie. And basically, it's a great indictment on secular humanism or man-centeredness. So we've got a very disturbing situation right now where a lot of people have actually made the state God. I mean, if you look at it, the big picture, just step back for a moment, it looks like a vast amount of people, having rejected God, are looking to the state to save us. The government must save us, or the super state, the United Nations, or the global state, some kind of one world government, one world religion, one world economic system, sort of like what Romans 13 and Revelation 13 warn us about. And so no authority is legitimate unless it's in submission to God. So the reformers had a very simple principle, and it's summarized in two words, lex rex. Lex means law in Latin, and rex means king in Latin, lex rex. So in the old Europe, they used to say rex lex, meaning the king is the law, the king's word is law. But the reformers inverted it, not rex lex, but lex rex. The law is king. In fact, Oliver Cromwell has on his tomb in England his principle, God, Christ, not man, is king. And so he made it clear that it is the law that is king, and the king is under the law, and he even put the king on trial for breaking the law and for violating his coronation oath to uphold Magna Carta. It is all part of the English Civil War between the Parliament and the king. But this principle of lex rex, in defense of liberty against tyrants, there's actually a book written, Lex Rex, by Samuel Rutherford. And to summarize it, the reformers' teaching, which is foundational for the English Civil War between Parliament and the king and also the American War of Independence, is this. We see that the king has power. He has an army. He has people tortured. He has people executed. He has people, in some cases, just talking about England now in the 1640s, people were branded in the face. People had their noses slit. They had their ears cut off. You know, the king has power. He can do all sorts of horrible things, close people's businesses, burn people's houses, confiscate their things. He has power. But does he have authority? Because Romans 13 says that the government is, that all authorities are instituted by God, not for the oppressing of the law-abiding, but for the protecting of the law-abiding. And so government is instituted, authorities are instituted by God in order to protect the law-abiding and to punish the law-breakers. And if you look at Romans 13 in detail, it's very clear. It's saying more to the government than saying to the people. Because God has instituted four governments, four levels of government. Self-government. Personal government is the first government. We've got to be self-controlled. Family government, parental control. A church government, and then civil government. Now, when you've got civil government is meant to be having the sword. Church government, they have the keys. The parents, they have the rod of discipline. Self-government, well, you've got your conscience. Now, must you obey your conscience? Well, yes, but can your conscience be wrong? Well, frequently it is, yes. There are people who are sincerely wrong. There's a way that seems right to demand the end thereof is death. I'm sure many jihadist mass murderers think that what they're doing is right, even when they're blowing people to death in their terror bombings. So that there are, unfortunately, people who are sincerely wrong. Can church government be wrong? Well, yes. In fact, religious authorities, just for starters, crucified Christ. The religious leaders of the Jews condemned Jesus to death. And so plainly, we know church councils have been wrong. They condemned to death, for example, a Bible translator, William Tyndale. The first 6,000 Bibles and New Testaments in English were all confiscated by the Bishop of London, burned. The English Bibles, the first Bibles in English. Today, the most expensive book in the world is an English New Testament by William Tyndale. There's only two in existence, and one was sold recently for over £5 million. Yes, churches, councils, popes, church leaders can be wrong. Well, what about family government? I'm afraid our parents abuse their children. So you're meant to obey your conscience, but your conscience must be kept with the word of God. You're meant to obey your parents and respect your parents, but there's such a thing as parental abuse. And our parents actually sell their children to slavery, into prostitution, into drug trafficking, even into becoming suicide jihadist bombers. And it might be a minimal case, but the fact is there are abuses. Is there such a thing as a false prophet in the church, a false teacher or false shepherd? Well, yes, Jesus warned us, don't be deceived. Watch the fruit. False teachers, false prophets, false shepherds. So all authorities are limited. Why would it be that when it comes to civil government, they get a blank check? And yet there are many Christians today seem to think that civil government gets a blank check. That while you've got to be discerning when it comes to your conscience, is it kept the word of God? You've got to be discerning when it comes to parental authority. And there's provision made for criminalizing abusive parents. And you've got to be careful when it comes to false teachers or false shepherds and false prophets. But when it comes to civil government, no. Well, they've deified the government, made them infallible. In many cases, the people who will not tolerate you questioning the state. And yet we've just come out of the 20th century where the biggest threat to life was not war, it wasn't crime, it was governments. Governments, secular humanist governments, killed over 180 million people in the 20th century. Not foreigners killed in war, their own citizens killed in peacetime by their own people, mostly in the Soviet Union and Red China and other communist governments. So plainly, the biggest threat to life and liberty in the world in history has been governments. And to think that people are looking to government for salvation, it's very dangerous because there's one God in the world and the government's not him. And Jesus is the way of the truth and life. And Jesus is the King of kings and Lord of lords. So the principle of Lex Rex was this. As you owe allegiance to your king owes allegiance to the King of kings. If your king is in rebellion to the King of kings, do not join him in his rebellion. So if we are confronted with a choice between obeying God or man, for example, on issues like abortion, taking innocent life or not, or worshipping God or bow down before this idol, this false god, this the statue and so on, you must obey God rather than man. So in the Bible, the midwives of Egypt who refused to kill the Hebrew baby boys born, they are commended in the Hall of Faith in Hebrews 11 because they disobeyed Pharaoh. And similarly, you can see that when the Apostle Peter stood before the Sanhedrin, the religious leaders of Israel who had condemned Jesus to death, and they ordered him, do not speak in his name. He said, you judge whether it is right to obey you rather than God. We must obey God rather than man. And so as Christians, as Protestants, as reformers, as people of the Reformed tradition, we hold to the principle that no government has authority unless it's in submission to God's authority. And this was, in fact, the opinion of not just Magna Carta, but the Chief Justice of Great Britain said, any law not founded and rooted in the law of God is invalid and is no law at all.
I have a question specifically on resolutions. A lot of people have been looking to, okay, well, how are we going to overcome this? How are we going to, how are our lives going to be in the future? What can we do to get over this? Mm-hmm. And one very popular topic among many is vaccines. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, there's a lot of moral reasons why you would oppose this. And so, for example, your bodily integrity and that of your children is important. Now, there's many people who have good reasons, scientific reasons, moral reasons, reasons of conscience, to say, no, I do not want a vaccine. And yet there are many people today who are saying that you should not be allowed to travel, you should not be allowed to go to school, participate in a sports event, unless you've had a mandatory vaccine. So how do you like this logic? It's my body, my choice. I've got the right to do what I want with my body. Now, where have you heard this argument before? Abortions. Mm-hmm. The abortionists are saying, I've got the right to kill a baby. Now, first of all, the baby isn't the mother's body, because how can you have two hearts, two livers? How can you have two brains? Or how can you have two genders? So obviously, the baby is a different personality and character than the mother. And the baby is going to be born and will have its own identity. So to say my body, my choice in an application to abortion seems a bit disingenuous. However, they don't want you to have that attitude when it comes to vaccines. And so look at how vaccines are made. In many cases, the vaccines are using aborted babies' DNA, and they've actually, many of these vaccines are actually structured over aborted babies' fetuses that they've been using for these experimentations, which makes it unethical from our point of view. But not only that, many of these things are dangerous. there's a lot of evidence that vaccines have actually spread diseases, and there's a tremendous expose on how the so-called Spanish flu of 1918, which killed more people than the entire First World War killed. I mean, that just is enough to boggle the brain. So the Spanish flu, which had nothing to do with Spain, it's only called the Spanish flu because Spain, not being party to the First World War, didn't have a censorship bureau and had freedom of the press. And while the belligerent nations were suppressing it because they thought it would undermine people's enthusiasm to get in crowded boats and cross the Atlantic to go and fight in Europe and things like this, they were suppressing the news about the flu. But the Spanish flu was caused primarily by vaccines against flu. And there's many cases where actual inoculations have caused the problem. So how do you like this for inconsistency? My vaccine protects me from this disease, but only if everyone around me and everyone I come into contact with also has the vaccine. Now, where's the logic? If this vaccine works, why do you care whether someone else chooses
to? It's like saying, if I have a sore throat, I'll take Corenza C, but I'll only heal if everyone that surrounds me also takes some Corenza C.
Yes, which would be an application, except Corenza C is not going to be as intrusive as sticking somebody else's DNA into the needle.
I can only get fit in running if everyone around me also trains for running.
Exactly. And
makes sense.
Yes. So this whole vaccine thing, they've got people into a panic. But you hear people like Bill Gates and others like the WHO, World Health Organization, saying nobody should be allowed outside a home until they have the vaccine. Now, they haven't invented the vaccine yet. They haven't tested the vaccine. They don't know if it's going to be effective or if it's going to be safe or what its side effects are yet. But they determined to have mandatory vaccines. Now, this sounds like communist China, North Korea, where a government can actually force you to have a vaccine. Or like George Orwell's 1984 or Aldous Huxley's Brave New World. This is a dystopian nightmare picture of the future where you don't even have the right of your own body, where the person wants to stick a whole lot of extremely dangerous things. So, okay, let's take this as an example. The logic that you can combat the disease by putting some of the disease in you. That's like a logic of a parent saying the best way to protect my child from pornography is to expose them to some pornography. Does that make sense? The best way to protect you from poison is to get some of the poison. This is ridiculously insane. Surely soap is better than filth, and surely healthy food is better than poison. And why would we want a vaccine? And many of these vaccine companies, many, which are part of Big Pharma, are involved in all kinds of extremely questionable and in many cases actually evil practices. So one of the biggest advocates of this mandatory vaccine right now, Bill Gates, one of the richest people in the world, he is the advocate of bringing world population down dramatically. He says we shouldn't have 7 billion people on the planet, we should have 1 billion. In fact, ideal amount would be 100 million. So, okay, what's going to happen to the 7 billion surplus population? Well, this man who wants to radically depopulate the world, bring down the world's population, which means most of the people in the world right now has just got to die or get out of the way. And this man is the main advocate of vaccines. He's also the main advocate of abortions. So, why should I trust somebody who wants me and billions of others dead that he says this is going to be good for my health? Because from his philosophy, which he has stated very plainly, he isn't wanting so many people in the world. He's wanted to decrease the world's population. So I don't think he's concerned about my survivability. But there's many other good reasons to question vaccines. And anyone who wants to do the homework will find that there's a lot of questions and a lot of proof that vaccinations are counterproductive, unhealthy, dangerous, have serious side effects. Just amongst many examples.
Well, just wait, before you continue there, how come Bill Gates has so much authority? How come so many people are listening to him?
Because he's got billions and billions and billions of dollars, and he invests in the World Health Organization, the United Nations, and a lot of media. And as a result, Bill Gates has influence through media and through politicians who can be bought, or at least borrowed, rented. Now, I've traveled a lot in my ministry work. I've traveled to over 42 countries. And I've been numerous occasions into Lancaster County in Pennsylvania. And there I've met the Mennonites and the Amish. And you know, they're the healthiest people in the world. Now, the Mennonites and the Amish, they try and live on 19th century rural lifestyle. So no vaccines. In fact, they don't even have electricity. They live very hardworking Christian work ethic lives on a farming agricultural level. But they will not have vaccines and things like this. And of course, they don't have cell phones and a whole lot of other technology around. They sure don't have G5 towers around. Do you know they have virtually no cases of Alzheimer's, no cases of Parkinson's, no case of so many cancers virtually unknown amongst them, and you can continue. So because they heat wholesome, whole grain, free range, no hormones pumped in, none of this spraying DDT over the crops and GMOs. I mean, they're living as close to the land as our ancestors did a century ago and more. And yet they don't have these problems. Now, interesting that if you want to be healthy, look at groups like the Amish, and they don't need or use vaccines or genetically modified crops and food or hormone pumped for cows for milk and all the other things that come out of them, cheese and so on. So there's so much in our society that's unhealthy. And the solution is not more chemicals. And that's what a vaccine is. A vaccine is chemicals, generally based on aborted babies, which is putting foreign DNAs into you and part of the disease into you. There's a lot of evidence, too, which you can look on the internet about the origin of the coronavirus, that it originated in laboratory, in Wuhan's chemical warfare, biological warfare laboratory, which is in Wuhan, interestingly. Well, that is another subject, but the point is you should be very, very careful before you allow somebody to inject anything into your body. And so if a person chooses to have vaccination or not, fair enough. But to make it mandatory and to say you don't have the right to refuse, that's deeply disturbing and that violates our Bill of Rights.
To look at this as a potential last question, that is, as it's a very, very big question, the topic of this is God's law or chaos. And looking at the current chaos that we are in, what do you think is the resolution or the solvent or the vaccine, if you were, for this? What would God say we should do?
I think we've got to get back to God's law. I mean, this is it. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And Jesus said, I've not come to abolish the law of the prophets. I've come not to abolish them, but to fulfill them. And I tell you the truth, until heaven and earth disappear, not the smallest letter, not the least stroke of a pen will by any means disappear from the law. So Jesus makes it clear the law of God is in effect. And he says, if you love me, you'll obey my commands. And blessed is a man who finds great delight in God's commands. The law of the Lord is perfect. In King David's Psalm 19, he says, the law of the Lord is perfect, reviving the soul. The statutes of the Lord are trustworthy, making the wise and simple. The precepts of the Lord are right, giving joy to the eyes. The commands of the Lord are radiant, giving light to the eyes. So God's laws can produce lasting justice and righteousness for individuals, for families, for churches, for nations. And only to the degree that we honor God and fear God and obey his commands can our societies function well and for good and for the freedom of all its citizens. And so I'm deeply concerned over those who are looking to man's law and to vaccines and to the United Nations and the World Health Organization, which are godless and antichrist and hate Christ. Professor John Wycliffe of Oxford University, when he produced the first handwritten translation New Testament to English in the 14th century, he wrote, the Bible is given for the government of the people, by the people, and for the people. Now that sounds familiar. The Bible is given for the government of the people, by the people, for the people. Doesn't that sound a bit like a quote from Abraham Lincoln, a Gettysburg Address? Yes, well, that was several hundred years later. Obviously, Abraham Lincoln must have been quoting from this well-known quote from John Wycliffe. Although he didn't mention the Bible when Abraham Lincoln quoted. But the original quote, which Abraham Lincoln plagiarized at the Gettysburg Address, is, the Bible is given for the government of the people, by the people, and for the people. You see, the philosophy of the school classroom in one generation becomes the philosophy of government in the next generation. And so those people say, oh, but the government's got nothing to say about political or social or national issues. Not so. Jesus said to Pontius Pilate, the Roman governor, you would have no authority over me unless it had been given to you from above. Jesus taught all government authority, all civil authorities delegated by God, answerable to God. Government is to be an agent of wrath to bring punishment on a wrongdoer. Civil government is to be a minister of justice. to punish those who do wrong. Right now, they're all about law enforcement, but it's arbitrary laws rather than justice. Justice, it's more important to protect the weak and the innocent and to punish the guilty than to punish people breaking some kind of infraction, which in no way is a breach of the moral law. So somebody walking their dog responsibly in an empty area without in any way violating social distancing, how are they in any way violating a moral law? Not one of the Ten Commandments are affected. And yet you'll have government standing by doing nothing while there's lots of looting. Right now we've got South African Airways about to be shut down. Thousands of staff put out of work. Why? Because it's been running at a loss for years with its central chief executive officers having looted the company, and the entire company having been looted by cadre deployment, and billions and billions have been stolen from South African Airways by the staff and by the leaders. And every year the taxpayers got to bail out SAA, which is not giving away free seats. And it's actually a very expensive and badly run airline, and bloated with far too much employees and some of the lowest work ethic people around, actually. I used to be a very much a frequent flyer of SAA, and I haven't flown with them for years because of their extremely shocking service. I'm not surprised they're going out of business. But here you've got theft on a high level, and yet you've got the government talking about, we're going to give you some kind of stimulus package and we're going to hand out some money. Well, how about they just cut taxes? How about they just cut our bloated government, which is extremely bloated? We've got vastly more cabinet ministers than we need. Do you know, under Jan Smuts, who's a well-known South African prime minister, there were a total of five cabinet ministers. Five cabinet ministers for all of South Africa under Jan Smuts. And we've got now, what, like 50 cabinet ministers. What on earth do we need a minister of youth and culture for? And you could just continue. There's a lot of trivia out there that's just really and truly, do we really need a cabinet minister dictating how we should live on these sort of areas of life? Right now, telling us whether we can walk our dog or run down the field or the canal in our neighborhood. So,
okay, well, these are a lot of things that we are currently facing, but my main question is, what can we as humans and as Christians do now to deal with this situation?
So we've got to come back to God's law. We've got to come back to self-government first and foremost, family government, church government, and realize civil government is just as limited and answerable to God as all other forms of government. All forms of government are under God, and all forms of government are delegated by God, and all forms of government are answerable to God, including my self-government. My conscience must be kept, the word of God, family government, which must be run by the Bible, church government, symbolized by the keys of discipline, civil government, symbolized by the sword of justice. And so the principles that God established in the government of Israel are the key principles of freedom that we need in this country too. Written constitution based on the revealed word of God to clearly define and restrict the powers of government. This government, as with every government on earth, has no right to suspend the Bill of Rights. They have no right to ever encroach on freedom of religion, freedom of speech, freedom of thought, freedom of movement, freedom of association, freedom of the press. These are outside of the legitimate realms of any government on earth. The separation of powers between executive, legislative, judicial, this is biblical, as the Lord in Israel separated the judiciary from the legislature, from the upper house, and from the executive. So we need a more decentralized country. This centralized to the extent that you can literally have 3.5 billion people on the planet on lockdown at the same time shows that we've got serious centralization going on. It should be decentralization. Let this village mayor, this town councillor, this governor, this area community decide whether they want to go on full lockdown, partial lockdown, whatever. Why should this be determined from top? You know, a village out in the Karoo, let's just say if you're living in Calvinia, why should you have the same rules that New York has to have? And a person living out in Wyoming or in Namaqualand, why would they need the same social distancing rules when they can't even see their neighbor, for goodness sakes? So this, the whole idea of centralization is a Tower of Babel, Nineveh, top-down pyramid, pharaoh type of way of doing things. That's not God's way. God's way has always been decentralized. We need a free market economy of supply and demand. It's fine for government to close the border when there's a threat, including of disease, it's fine for them to advise people, but they do not have the right to say, this business is essential, this business is not essential, you can't do this. They can advise, but it should be up to the local communities, individuals, families, congregations to make many of these decisions. And that's a biblical principle. And so if we could get back to the biblical education program where parents are training their children not according to a state syllabus, but according to a home-based education system founded in the Bible, rooted in the character of God, we will find if we go back to studying the Word of God, we will see all of the freedoms. You know, in the Ten Commands, we find all of our rights. So, for example, in the Ten Commands, you have the foundations for freedom of worship, because the only restriction on worship is you shall worship the Lord your God, and you're not to bow before idols. Outside that, you've got tremendous freedom of worship. Congregational form of worship or Episcopal form of worship or Presbyterian form of worship is not mentioned in the Ten Commands. You have freedom of worship, freedom of religion, freedom to know God's will and to do it. You have freedom of speech. The only restriction on free speech that you get in the Ten Commands is you're not to take God's law, you're not to take God's name in vain, and you're not to bear false witness. So aside from those prohibitions against blasphemy and lying, you have freedom of speech. You have the right to work and to rest, respect for authority, right to life. You shall not murder is the only restriction on your right to action. Therefore, the right to life is entrenched. Sanctity of marriage is protected by do not commit adultery. Private ownership of property, do not steal. Right to be protected from slander, do not bear false witness. Freedom of conscience, the only restriction your conscience is don't covet. Don't think unworthy thoughts of God. I mean, that's it. Outside that, tremendous freedom. So it was from studying the law of God and the word of God that the great reformers built the freest, most productive nations on earth, Western civilization. And I believe if we would get back to these principles that made our societies great and free, these are foundational principles. This is what Hugo Grotius said about government. He said, he knows not how to rule a kingdom who cannot govern a province, nor can he manage a province who cannot order a city, nor can he order a city that knows not how to regulate a village, nor can he regulate a village that cannot guide his family, nor can a man govern well his family who doesn't know how to govern himself. Neither can anyone govern himself unless his reason be lord and his will and appetite are vassals or servants. Nor can reason rule unless herself ruled by God and be wholly obedient to him. That's what Hugo Grotius said in the 16th century. And it's the principle that if you can't be self-disciplined, then you are not fit to rule. And in the Bible, we've got principles that if a person cannot rule his family well, then he shouldn't be put in government position. If he hasn't proved himself on lower levels, he shouldn't be put to higher. And it's very disturbing that today we have people who've never run an effective business who become ministers of finance. You get people who are in charge of youth who don't even have children. You've got people who are ruling a country who've never been married and have had children. You've got people who haven't proved themselves on lower levels, such as, you know, being a governor of a province, who then become president of a country. You've got people whose family is a disaster area and they've gone through multiple divorces, becoming president. How is that even possible? If a person can't be self-governed, they shouldn't take higher principles and higher levels of authority. So I believe a lot of the chaos we've got now, it's not just the coronavirus, it's not just the government, it's that we violated and neglected and ignored the laws of God on so many levels. And so the solution is to get people back to the Word of God, back to the study of the law of God. And it's vital. We've got to know the biblical principles that God has put in place for every area of life. And in this way, we won't just be reacting to all the terrible things that come from man's inhumanity to man and rebellion to God, but we will be reformers setting the agenda and putting out workable, proven solutions. And that's what we've got to be, people who are not just cursing the darkness, but lighting a candle.
Are there any other last-minute points you'd like to add?
Well, I think it's important for people who are interested in this to get the book Biblical Principles for Africa, which is also available in Afrikaans and in French. Biblical Principles for Africa is also available as an ebook. And so if you go on to christianlibertybooks.co.za, you'll get details about Biblical Principles for Africa, English, Afrikaans, or French, or ebook, and other things like the Biblical Worldview Manual. You'll find on our frontlinemissionsa.org website videos and audios and articles dealing with God and government and God's law or chaos and other key principles like this. Let's use this time of lockdown to rethink everything and come up with workable biblical solutions that give hope for the future for our country.
Well, thank you so much, Dad. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Please stay safe, and we'll see you next time.
God bless. Good night.